Hello, friends. We're continuing now. We're working on this second initiation compilation, and we're starting with the video for program number 6. Now, you may remember, I think it was in the last video, or maybe immediately before, I was struggling to remember why it was that Jupiter and Venus, or Venus and Jupiter, were contending for dominance at the second initiation. And this was something found in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1. Was it 1? Volume 1. It brings him under the Neptunian influences, with Venus and Jupiter contending for control. And I couldn't think of the reference in the Secret Doctrine. And then later it kind of came to me. And Venus represented Narada, who is, from one perspective, Sanat Kumara, and was indicating a chastity and a rising out of form creation, whereas Jupiter, in this case, represented Brihaspati, or the ancestral fires, which were involved in form creation and involved the individual in the maintaining of the old fires and not the new ones, which led higher into more spiritual possibilities. So Narada under Venus, in this case, was the one to follow and not the Brihaspati. Well, anyway, that's not anywhere near a complete discussion of those two, but I believe that they were the ones that were brought to our attention in the Secret Doctrine, with Brihaspati being another name, I think, for Jupiter. And, you know, I had begun to talk about the Esoteric Psychology reference, or rather Esoteric Astrology reference, and here it is. So I'll just read through it. It was coming up, and maybe I got a little bit overeager here. So these are the planetary influences during initiations. And disciples upon the path of discipleship are strongly influenced by Mercury and Saturn, one bringing illumination and the other offering opportunity. Mercury is the planet of illumination, and Saturn the planet of opportunity, that is to face the difficult obstacles which are holding one back and to deal with them appropriately. And some people say, well, this is the path of accepted discipleship, but that would take us past the first initiation. So even in our preparation for the kinds of detaching attitudes we need for the first degree and beyond, Mercury and Saturn are involved. And maybe they are even coming in around the time of the first initiation. They certainly do come in later for the fourth degree. Number two, at the various initiations, the influence of the planets affects the candidate in totally different manner than earlier. Now, that's interesting. So Mercury, Saturn will be one example of a different and higher kind of effect later at the fourth degree. Cyclically, the energies from the constellations pour through the planetary centers. And we are familiar with all of this from page 70 and 71 of Esoteric Astrology. And some of us may be going through this right now, and certainly to a degree humanity is, this first initiation process involving Vulcan and Pluto. At the first initiation, the disciple has to contend with the crystallizing, that's Vulcan, and destroying forces, that's Pluto, of Vulcan and Pluto. The influence of Vulcan reaches to the very depths of his nature, whilst Pluto drags to the surface and destroys all that hinders in these lower regions. And I think, you know, when this person at the first degree has a strong Taurus and Pisces, we may see Vulcan and Pluto involved, or even a strong Taurus and Scorpio. So, definitely Pluto is the destroyer, and Vulcan can be the constructor, but also it's the hammer blow of destruction and the imposition via the etheric body of a new type of will, which no longer allows the dense physical vehicle to run away with the individual. Now, this we've been discussing. At the second initiation, the candidate comes under the influence of three planets, Neptune, Venus, and Jupiter, the three center solar plexus, that's Neptune, hearts, that's Jupiter, and Venus, is the throat related to Taurus, and to the mind. Now, it's, how do we want to apportion these? They're all actively involved. It doesn't say that Venus and Jupiter are contending, because if heart and throat were contending, and Jupiter definitely rules the heart center on a higher turn of the spiral, then it's the heart that should win. And certainly Jupiter is a more overall advanced planet than Venus, even though Venus's schedule of unfoldment seems to be quite a bit ahead of Jupiter's. Okay. Neptune in this case is emphasizing its six-ray nature and the solar plexus, but it certainly rises to the heart, and it rises even to the Ajna center when we're dealing with the astral centers, and also it rises to the heart within the head, as does Jupiter. There's a lot of second ray in these planets, but also we find sixth ray in Neptune, we find sixth ray in Venus from the monadic perspective, and I wouldn't doubt that enthusiastic Jupiter has some pretty strong sixth ray at the beginning of its expression. So those are the two main references, one from esoteric psychology, one from the esoteric astrology about Neptune, Venus, and Jupiter, the main planets active at the second degree, but we cannot forget the turbulence of Mars and the eliminative power of Pluto, and we cannot forget the application of the will, which holds the negative emotions in check as Cain, Vulcain, kills Abel, the shepherd. The shepherd takes care of sheep, and sheep are ruled by Aries, and Aries is ruled by Mars. So you can see the connection there. And, although this is not part of the show here, I'll just go on and say at the third initiation, the moon veiling a hidden planet, which is probably in this case Vulcan, and Mars bring about a fearful conflict. What are we afraid of here? Maybe losing our identification with the personality. But at the end, the man is released from personality control, the ancient domination of the personality, ancient authority of the personality is ended. At the fourth initiation, here we have Mercury and Saturn, and they bring about great changes and unique revelation. But their effect is very different to the earlier experience, because Mercury is the full-blown intuition on the Buddhic plane. Mercury is wisdom, Bud, and the Buddhic plane is the plane of wisdom. So there's a great, still greater illumination, and Saturn rules the, in a way, the lower 21 subplanes. But Saturn also can rule the atmic plane and the divine will as it expresses on the atmic plane, and it certainly relates to the divine plan, which is strongly atmic. So whether Saturn, I think Saturn is both lower and higher in its demonstrations than Mercury in this instance, though Mercury is not just the thinking mind as it was on the path of discipleship, and Saturn is not just discipline. Saturn is the divine plan, and Mercury is a very strong expression of the intuition. At the fifth and final initiation, and H.P. Blavatsky actually had this combination, Uranus and Jupiter appear, and she had that in Aquarius, I think, and conjuncted, and produce a beneficent, that's Jupiter, organization, that's Uranus, of the totality of energies worthy of a master. Now, of course, the mistake would be, well, a totality of energies found in the initiate's equipment. The mistake would be when you see a person that has the Jupiter Uranus, you assume that they have to be a very high initiate or a master, but that's, not the case. You have to interpret different combinations and patterns and conjunctions and geometrical relations in terms of what you intuit of the individual's development. Because as we see, the planets will work in a completely different manner. Saturn and Mercury can work as the disciplined mind and the clear reasoning powers, not yet pure reason, as later Mercury will be pure reason of the Buddhic plane, and Saturn will be ruling the Atmic plane and have a lot to do with the imposition of the will through the plan. It's just a different and higher type of expression. The planets are the same. So, as usual, determine where people are on the path, at least with some degree of approximation and in relation to their rays and their astrological chart, and then you can interpret more accurately. When this reorganization is complete, the initiate can then escape from off the wheel and then can truly live. And true livingness comes with the expression of the monad, which is possible to the fifth degree initiate, though he is not yet identified completely as the monad because he's still atmically focused. And eventually, the one who takes the sixth degree and is a Chohan will be focused on the sixth plane. All of these relationships, they occur to us as significant, and they come to mind in the right context. But the intuition has to be the guide, and the salient points have to appear spontaneously, calling upon those aspects in the repository of knowledge which are relevant. But we have to begin the slow way. The slow way is oftentimes just looking at different items of knowledge and being as clear about them as one can be, and then seeing some of their relationships. But pretty soon, many relationships begin to appear, and the intuition can call upon the relevant relationships at the right time without our excessively reasoning efforts. All right. Now, different signs of the zodiac are associated particularly with different initiations. Although Capricorn is associated with the first five up to the fifth, in general, we would say Leo is particularly associated with the first, Scorpio with the second, Capricorn with the third. When it comes to the fourth initiation, maybe, different signs are there. Offering different possibilities. Aquarius and Pisces are both found there. And even the fifth initiation, Aquarius, and for some, Pisces. And not to mention Leo again, which is the fifth sign coming in at the fifth degree. I think I've dealt with all this as I've probably discussed this in my work on the rays and the initiation video work and in the book on the egoic lotus, I suspect. Can't tell you where, though. It's all in there, I think. So this one, number 46, is about the tests undergone in Scorpio, making the initiate fit for the second initiation. DK rather promised that to a Taurus individual in his group. LF, no, it's not LFU. It was a Taurus person. Yeah, I remembered it then. His name was LUT, and he was the husband of the secretary of Alice Bailey, a man who had made a big sacrifice for the Tibetan, and the Tibetan was repaying him, saying, "Look, we're not ungrateful. We recognize what you have done, and we've offered opportunity." But the man had a huge struggle, but DK seemed to be promising him a scorpionic life, following the Taurus life, in which he would face the tremendous challenges of the second initiation. For the most part, the people who were working with the Tibetan were facing that particular initiation, and whether it was going to be one life or two or three, that's not a lot of lives when you consider the long, long history of the soul. The personality, as the Tibetan has said, is in a rush because it knows the time is short, and from its usual perspective, the elapsing of one life seems a very long time, and there's no real understanding of the huge span of time through which the consciousness has passed. But, you know, after death and as we rise into the causal body and see things as they have been, maybe we develop a different perspective. Anyway, this LUT, that was his name. He was Sun in Taurus, and was it Leo rising in Moon in Libra or Libra rising in the Moon in Leo? One of those two. And he had lots of attachments, but he was going to have the chance to be rid of them, I think, and take the second degree. I mean, the Tibetan can pretty well tell how long it's going to take and what kind of opportunities one will be offered in the next several lives. Somewhere it was saying that the solar angel, a great being, you know, that's a member of the council chamber within the sun of all things, can see several lives ahead, a number of lives ahead, and a number of lives backwards, and knows what energy to apply. So in Scorpio, in this sign, the disciple undergoes those tests which will enable him to take the second initiation. Well, Scorpio is testing in all regards for the first, second, and third initiations. You know, sex, money, and comfort, first initiation. Fear, hatred, and ambition, second initiation. And pride, separativeness, and cruelty, the third initiation. So he undergoes those tests which will enable him to take the second initiation. He has to, you know, as it were, put his foot upon the various heads of the Hydra and eventually vitiate the whole dweller on the threshold by kneeling and raising it into the pure air of intuition wherein the illusion that it represents dies. And demonstrate that the desire nature is subdued and conquered, and that the lower nature is, by being lifted up in the air, that is, into heaven, capable of reaching the goal for this world period. It looks like illumination, perhaps, and the conquest of ordinary downward tending or horizontal desire, and that from the earthly foundations of Scorpio, the personality can be so tested that it shows fitness for the world service demanded by Aquarius. And, you know, these tests are worked out on the physical plane. On the physical plane. So it's taken right down into active demonstration, and a person has to prove right here on the physical plane that he can do those things. Now, when do we really lift the entire Hydra into the air? I don't know. You know, it's only maybe at the third degree that we've really, really conquered the nine vices that I've just listed and are listed in the Scorpio chapter. And really, when you look at it, there are other vices. They don't hold us so much to the physical plane and to the dense physical body, the lower 18 subplanes of the planetary logos, but there are other problems with egoism even after the third degree, a very subtle form of egoism which prevents a person from renouncing all on the altar in the name of the Christ and following the Christ. And that has to be, you know, a very selfless act undertaking, because one really, if finally understands who one is and what's to be done with one's accumulations of virtue. So, you know, when we get to that point in our lives, we will understand more. And DK is so often telling us, you know, later you will understand whereof I speak, he says. Neptune in the second initiation, in this world period and in a peculiar manner, and as far as the race Aryan, to which the Western world belongs, and there's quite a bit in Africa and maybe South America and maybe in India, and, you know, in Asia perhaps, which is not considered the Western world, Neptune is known esoterically as the initiator. Esoterically, sometimes it's a word that means monadically, or it can simply refer to the soul. It's not an external planet. Maybe it's the most powerful planet in our particular solar system, given the second race soul nature of our solar system, and looking for one of the synthesizing planets, which is a very high second ray expression, and that would be Neptune expressing the second ray monad. In certain ancient formulas, the great teacher of the West, I assume that's the Christ, or whatever great teacher of the West, and the present world initiator of Christ, is spoken of as a Neptune who rules the ocean in which the little fish swim, the ocean of matter, whose trident and astrological symbol signifies the Trinity in manifestation. Interesting that Shiva also carries this, so Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma are thereby represented, and who is the ruler of the Piscean age. Well, I think Pisces is the sign of the zodiac ultimately most associated with the Christ, and although it is not the sign, we are told, through which the greatest part of the second ray comes at this time, which is Virgo, ultimately it will be, I think, shown to be the most powerful of the secondary signs, and Neptune, its special ruler, being particularly, peculiarly connected with that secondary potency. The formula runs as follows, speaking esoterically, and we always have to figure out what DK means when he says speaking esoterically, how deep is the level of esotericism. The fish goddesses, who have leapt from earth, Virgo, to water, Pisces, unitedly give birth to the fish god, who is Christ, who introduces the water of life from the higher ethers, should we say, from the Buddhic plane, let us say, where Neptune also rules, into the ocean of substance, which is the lower physical 18 subplanes, or even the lower 21 subplanes, and thus brings light, the light of the world, brings light to the world, the great Buddhic light via Neptune into matter. Thus does Neptune work, and thus does the Christ work, irradiating with the light of love the denser planes as the preliminary initiator. So these fish goddesses show the relationship between, on the mutable cross, Virgo and Pisces, from materiality to the more emotional condition, and eventually the soul is born in all of us, and especially via the ministrations of the great preliminary initiator. I'm glad he says it's a great mystery, revealed only at the time of the second initiation, in which control of the fluidic astral plane is demonstrated. There's a lot of fluidity and versatility and movement in the mind as well, but we have to overcome the glamours of the astral plane and stabilize them, and certainly Vulcan helps us hold these waters in a state that will not be prone to glamour and will not veil the truth. It's interesting about Neptune, it can so much veil the truth, but it also is the light of pure reason, and Blavatsky calls it the God of reasoning. And I think that's the God of pure reasoning, which is an intuitive understanding of all relations. And eventually, it is monadic and salvational, and rules the descent of the monad on its pilgrimage of salvation. I leave the Father's home, ruled by Pisces in this case, and turning back, I save. And so it's a great planet of saviorship. Anyway, Christ will come to birth in us. We will encounter the Christ. We will encounter Neptune preliminarily in our initiatory quest for the first and second initiation. And then we'll encounter Sanat Kumara under Uranus, Uranus being the great initiating planet, allowing for the kinds of transmutations, transformations, and transfiguration that Sanat Kumara can give. So that's more the encounter with electric fire beginning at the third degree and the solar fire of Neptune earlier. And Neptune is said to be the home of the solar flames. So water and fire are there blended. Okay, well, there's more to it, and it will occur to us as we go along. Here's Neptune again in the advanced Leo subject, wherein the sun is veiling Neptune, I presume, at the second initiation, so that when you have, you know, strong Leo, it's not only an indication of the first degree, but the sun in Leo can veil Neptune, and that will give the entree into the second degree, and, well, Leo is involved at the third degree, but there it's more involved with the planet Uranus, and it's the hierarchical ruler. Neptune being the sign of the deity of the waters. And, you know, we have much trouble on this planet with the waters, but Neptune can be uplifting and transformational, and it can produce storms, but it can calm the storms and raise the astral body into the light of the intuition of the Buddhic plane, which Neptune also rules. Neptune being the sign of the deity of the waters, maybe we have to call Christ in a way, the deity of the waters, is related to the sixth ray, not exclusively, but certainly so, and maybe its soul ray is that, which governs the astral or emotional plane of desire. When Neptune is thus active in the advanced Leo subject, meaning, you know, someone who's taking the second degree, someone who is taking the second degree, is advanced. And we remember ISGL, you know, being told that DK rated him highly. He was taking the second degree. Well, it's all relative there, isn't it? So when Neptune is thus active in the advanced Leo subject, emotion, desire, which is rather related to lower factors or horizontal factors, have been transmuted into love, aspiration. The selfishness is killed out very much at the second degree, and aspiration, an uplifting towards the intuitive level, is found. They've been, emotion, desire, have been transmuted into love and aspiration, and are dedicated to and oriented to the soul. Now, it's one of the things about Neptune. It really can and does orient towards the soul and the love aspect of the soul and towards the Buddhic plane. And from that Buddhic plane has come the synthesis petals, and the Christ energy is increasingly infusing the egoic lotus. So Neptune orients us to that type of infusion. So love and aspiration are oriented to the soul. The entire emotional or sensitive nature is responsive to energies coming from the heart of the sun. What is the heart of the sun? Is it found on the cosmic astral plane? Is it found to a degree on the monadic plane? I mean, that would be quite interesting because, you know, heart centers, heart chakras are found on the second plane of the various planes. Or is it, in fact, the causal body of the Solo Logos, just the way we could say our own causal body is a heart-like sun or a sun-like heart. So anyway, from something that's not the external sun, we begin to experience these great streams of love coming from an essentially second-ray being, our solar logos. We call it the heart of the sun, and I'm sure that on the way into our own causal nature, our Buddhic nature, the monadic plane is touched, being a second plane. There's probably a subjective sun which is touched on the cosmic astral plane, and there's a descent coming from the first sublevel of the cosmic mental plane where the causal body of the solar logos is found. So this is a term, heart of the sun, which is a little hard to locate, but I think all those different locations are possible. And when this is the case, these energies coming from the heart of the sun, it indicates that the disciple is now ready for the second initiation. So let's really understand the power of love is a great power at the second initiation. And the astral body eventually really has to express this power of love. It's not just enough to be intelligent, spiritually intelligent, spiritual mind, mental illumination, the Venus factor, which blends love and mind, and I think, you know, in a way is related to the heart of the sun, has to be active for the second initiation to be taken. So here's the thing, you know, when you look for initiates of the second degree, at least those that are not in danger of really going off on the left-hand path, to what extent is love really infusing the astral body? That is a question. All right, what about Taurus here? This is all interesting about the second initiation. Important. Taurus is the second sign, so by numerical affinity, it has to be connected with the second initiation. Even Aquarius does, being the second sign backwards. Even Pisces does, from another way of counting, being the second sign backwards, beginning in Aries, or in the clockwise direction. So there, you know, in my book on the causal body and on the egoic lotus, I've tried to deal with a number of these numerical relations. And they, you know, here's an individual, and you have to understand that individual and how the various signs and planets can be used in the light of that individual's development and in light of their astrological equipment. The astrological equipment is not always saying the same thing. It just depends on the kind of individual you have. Thus it is for groups and larger groups and so forth. So you really have to study the form and the expression of the one before you know how these different astrological factors can, at this time, appropriately be applied. The secret of Taurus is revealed at the second initiation. Okay. Lots of light, right? Just as Capricorn, the secret of the soul, is revealed at the third initiation. So, by the sudden removal, that's interesting, or disappearance of world glamour in the blinding energy of light. So although there are some vestigial glamours, some things that kind of hang on, even after the second degree, we are expecting a rather dramatic disappearance of these glamorous forms in the intensity of light, which can be found in Taurus. This constitutes the final radiant activity which consummates the play of the Taurian force upon humanity during the long cyclic journey to which man is committed. Don't know what that thing is doing there in that comma. But, you know, we have to remember also that the fourth degree is not necessarily without its Taurian influence, because the light is very needed there, and Vulcan to help smash that causal body and deliver a great stream of will energy, which shows that you can never work entirely from within the causal body and still fulfill the divine plan the way it might be fulfilled, that Taurus and Vulcan have to be active as well. The anyway, there is a great display of light, and in the light, the glamour disappears. So, radiant activity, and we'll say, in the great light, the glamour disappears. Now, remember that Shambhala has a strong Taurian component, and that's at the Taurus festival that the entire hierarchy comes closest. And all of us as disciples and aspirants and all that, we come closest to being able to understand the Shambhala energy. And that's because unfettered enlightenment pours forth from Shambhala. And that certainly has to do with Taurus, which is the mother of illumination. So let's not forget that the great light of Shambhala is related to this very luminous constellation Taurus, the mother of illumination. Anyway, there is a climax in all this at the second degree, but for the disciple moving onward, we don't discount Taurus as a great lighted revelatory power. Anyway, the individual here enacts on a tiny scale what humanity as a whole will enact when it takes initiation in Taurus, and that will be, as far as I can see, the great second initiation of humanity, still far away. So we have a lot of work to do with the etheric levels first, okay? Okay, well, we're going to try to... Okay, we got a little problem here. Okay, so every once in a while, some complaint comes up from Microsoft telling me you can't save. Bad thing to tell a second-ray type. So anyway, Taurus has this tremendous potential visible at different types of initiations. It probably even has something to do with the light supernal, as Venus does at the third initiation, and the blinding light of Shambhala as the monad is contacted more directly at the fourth initiation. And since revelation is the key to the fifth initiation, we need revelation in the light. We can understand how Taurus would be involved. So you have to study very carefully the particular potentials of any sign in relation to the stage of evolution through which the individual is passing. Okay, so, right, the individual enacts on a tiny scale what humanity as a whole will one day enact. That which impelled to the process of involution and evolution, that is, desire, you know, there's that Taurus word, the desire to incarnate, takes form at the second initiation in the will to liberation, and finds itself released through the will to serve universally in Aquarius. Now, wouldn't you say that with the Buddha being, you know, the par exemplar Taurian, the will to liberation is extremely strong? So the will to be free from all that desire has involved us in is very strong here in Taurus. And, you know, hence it will be related to Uranus, even though that planet falls in the sign, and to Shambhala and to the Lords of Liberation. And much of the Second World War was fought out with Uranus in Taurus. And the Lords of Liberation did come to the rescue, so to speak, following the inchoate cry of humanity for liberation. So we certainly got ourselves in deep into matter through the whole question of our desire nature. And even though from the monadic perspective, our intention was to descend and to help liberate the entrapped lives, but we became entrapped ourselves, and at a certain point we awaken. So the will to liberation in Taurus, that's a bit like the will to know, you know, in Leo, and the will to illumine in Leo. Be alert for the different forms of will that DK occasionally tells us about in relation to the signs. They're oftentimes hiding. Like I had not, you know, thought so actively of this will to liberation in Taurus, and, you know, to understand. Look at Krishnamurti as another Taurus known as Alcyone. That's what they called him because his birthday was so close to that important constellation found in Taurus, so to speak. He had a tremendous will to liberation, and he was helping people to be liberated from their usual thought form and mental preoccupations. Even speaking to them, as one of the masters complained, as if they were the monad. But there's Taurus again, in relation to the second plane, the second sign, the monadic plane. So always use these numerical affinities, and new connections will be revealed. Interestingly, in the case of Krishnamurti, although his sun was in Taurus, it was Aquarius, his rising sign. So he was well equipped here for the fourth initiation, and we have not received any indication that he did not take that initiation, even though maybe some of the masters didn't approve entirely of the way he was going about it. Okay, now we go on. In this particular compilation, this is our seventh program, and we've done 26 pages roughly out of 37, so we have a ways to go, and there's more to come. You know, if we really wanted to look at every single reference DK had here, it would be a very big job. I think in some cases we're pretty close. Maybe we'll do one on Shambhala, and I think due to the completeness of the compilers, we'll have almost everything on Shambhala. Okay, so the second utterance of the Christ and the second initiation, of course, with utterance is the throat center, and then Taurus astrologically rules the throat. His second utterance came at the time of the baptism in Jordan when he said to John the Baptist, "Suffer it to be so now, allow it to be so now, for thus it becometh us to fulfill all righteousness." This was the, you know, John the Baptist saying, "How can I baptize you, Lord? You are so far beyond me." But this was the dramatization for the sake of humanity, and it had to be done in the way the Christ foresaw. So here is in this second initiation, which symbolizes the conquest of desire, at least the lower desire, right? And we certainly are at that point realizing that there are many higher things after which to quest. He passes on into the realm of fulfillment and of the completion of planned righteous activity. So this is, again, the idea of speed after the second initiation. Okay. The second initiation. For his own personal desire, necessarily of the very highest order on account of his high point in evolution, he substitutes the divine will, or at least begins to do so. This is consummated in the garden. Garden of Gethsemane. And interesting here, you know, the will appearing as it does, as it tends to begin appearing at the time of the second degree, and the association of Taurus with Vulcan and the will. So the Christ was intensely aware of the value of his words, and he did not give in to what's called by the Tibetan the wordy disquisitions of the concrete mind. Or was it Moria that said that? One of those two talked about how we must, I think Moria talked about how we must avoid the cerebral sinuosity of the brain, you know. Nothing straight there, but Christ had the first ray mind, and he did not meet these circumstances with a bunch of words. He enunciated principles, and he came to fulfill the law, and we see that the divine will is very, very strong here. Vulcan is coming into effect over Mars, and the selfishness under Mars is being subdued at the second initiation, though there's that climax more at the third, when there is this fearful conflict, and I think it's between the moon veiling Vulcan and Mars ruling the entire personality. So all of this, you know, there's an energy substratum behind all of these events, and you know, we can just take the events on the surface and say, well, this is what happened. Or we can see what it is from an energy perspective, which did, which caused them. Okay. So the divine will is really coming into play here in the life of the Christ. After all, look, think of it. He's already a master. He's already the head of the hierarchy for 500 years. Maybe this is not realized. Ever since the Buddha made his choice on the path of earth service and went through the sixth initiation involving the cosmic mental plane, the Christ had been the head of the hierarchy. And so when he takes over the body of Jesus, you have the head of the hierarchy making these pronouncements. That's a lot different from baby Jesus, you know. This is a huge hierarchical process, which we are fortunate enough now to have DK somewhat explained to us. Okay, anyway, the Buddha, his main story was the conquest of desire. The second initiation is about the conquest of low desire and the co-measurement of that great cosmic factor desire in relation to aspiration. So we take away our desire for the phenomenal world, and we redirect it towards reality, and we have the great light to help us to do that. Okay, as I say, here we are, one paragraph after another, seen in a different position relative to each other, a juxtaposition, and maybe we're going to learn something here, you know. Why bother learning, you know? I can only imagine how many thousands of years Master DK really studied to know intuitively and appropriately what he does know now. And maybe for some of us it feels like we're just beginning, but we've been given some excellent material, the study of which certainly can't be set aside at all during the Aquarian Age, though more will be added to it. And when we think of it, the secret doctrine, we're not setting that aside, not at all. We're just adding to it. And when we think of the different ruler, planetary rulerships of the signs, when we have, let's say, Aquarius, and we have Uranus as the first ruler, and when we move on to Jupiter as spiritual aspirants and disciples, we're not setting Uranus aside. We're just making Uranus a subset of what we are now studying. And eventually the moon veiling three planets will come in, and we're not setting Jupiter aside. We're just making it a subset of that upon which we concentrate. So we're into a both-and situation. And we're not just saying, we're done with that now, and now on to other things. We keep the values we have accumulated. Maybe the causal body is the egoic lotus is the symbol of that. Even though we're not working on those things anymore, they form kind of a substratum of our helping us move forward into the new area. The dual life of the disciple after the second degree. Okay, you need to remember that the initiate has freed himself after the second initiation from the complexities of emotional and astral control. You know, it's kind of maddening sometimes when people or ourselves are under this emotional control and how any little impression can delay release and how many changes there can be and so forth. We need to really be in the light and to be looking at the astral reactions from the position of light, and the coming into the fifth ray in preparation for the third initiation really helps. Glamour can no longer overpower him. It may rise, but it doesn't overpower him. And that's the important thing. Such glamour may arise, but it does not overpower the disciple. He can stand with steadfastness in spite of all he may do and feel. Now, there, steadfastness, it's a fourth ray thing in a way, and it relates to Vulcan, which has lots of the fourth ray and first ray, the ability to stand without being driven up and down the land, pushed here and there by our feelings and desires. So in the midst of desirous promptings, we stand, and thus I stand, you know, in the disciple, mantra of the disciple. We say what we are, and thus I stand. Right. Okay. I have a little war going on here with my computer. It doesn't want me to, tells me I can't save what I should be saving. Hopefully it is saving as it should when I go through a little bit of extra work. So at the second degree here, freed from the complexities of the emotional astral control, may see glamour arise, but can handle it, okay? And can recognize it for what it is. See, so much of the problem of glamour is we don't recognize it for what it is. We don't recognize it at all. And someone else has to point out to us, often to our surprise, that we may be under the effect of a glamour. He realizes that the cyclic condition is related to the pairs of opposites. It's the, in this case, the vertical pairs of opposites, I would say. And the soul and personality, that is. And is part of the life, part of the life manifestation of existence itself. There's going to be this alternation constant between the high and the low. And in a way, we have the mystical experience on top of the hill, and God's in his heaven, and all's right with the world, and then we're plunged into the valley where there's less light. There may be despair, there may be depression. Aquarius is associated also with that up and down motion, but maybe more in the earlier part of the process than later. In the process of learning this, he passes through great difficulties. I guess there's none of us who have not in the past gone through great difficulties to arrive at where we are now. He, as a soul, subjects himself to a life of outgoing, of magnetic influence, and of extroversion. And that sometimes, some lives, well, let's see what we got here. Some lives are that way. And others are more introverted. So, you know, DK asks us to take a look and see whether we are passing through a life of extroversion and expression or regathering our forces. Of course, right now we're dealing with the externalization of the hierarchy, and no matter what we might feel like doing, we are driven to make the ageless wisdom visible, available, useful, seen, you know, and understood by many people who otherwise might not contact it. He as a soul subjects himself to a life of outgoing, of magnetic influence, and of extroversion. He may follow this immediately with a life of withdrawal, of apparent lack of interest in his relationships and environment, and with an intense introspective, introverted expression. I mean, think of the people who have withdrawn into the monasteries and nunneries for this internal life. But as I say, there's so much pressure, even on the masters, to externalize, even while reaching towards Shambhala, that I don't think we can be exempt or immune from this. Between these two extremes, he may flounder distressingly, sometimes for many lives, until he learns to fuse and blend the two expressions. You know, we have to somehow achieve the balance. The balance must be achieved, and it takes a while before we realize that we're really out of balance. But when we display fanatical tendencies one way or another, and hopefully we can recognize them, then we may well be out of balance, either that or have such an assignment that that degree of fanaticism is necessary in order to carry it out. Then the dual life of the accepted disciple in its various grades and stages becomes clear to him. Now, so many of those around DK eventually became accepted disciples and were expected to live the life of the soul and the life of outgoing. And it, you know, it may indicate to you, oh, I could make so much spiritual progress if I only didn't have to be so externally responsible. Or you could say, well, if I weren't so internally responsive, I could do a lot better on the outer plane. But somehow a balance between these two tendencies, ingoing, outgoing and ingoing, has to be achieved. And each one of us could ask ourselves how we are doing with this relative balance. Constantly and systematically, both outgoing and withdrawing, serving in the world and living the life of reflection, play their useful part. So, you know, when you are a member of the Arcane School, it emphasizes this, and we in the Moray Federation try to emphasize this. Emphasize the balance. The time has come for the balance, and maybe that's because Libra is gaining such power in the planetary horoscope, we are told. So it's bringing many things into a right relation, and he tells us, you know, there's no real cause for worry. The fourth ray is coming in with its ability to harmonize and so forth. Well, he tells us that at the other moments, and he's telling us there's a lot of need for worry because we could blow ourselves up. Well, we have to take all this in terms of when it was written, what has been accomplished since it has been written, and so forth. We're very, very close now to the impartation of the third installment of his work. That's a very exciting thing. Maybe I don't think anybody in the Theosophical Society at the time knew that was coming. And they, you know, mocked or made fun of Alice Bailey or thought she was a pretentious person. And so many of them discounted what she was writing until some of them began to realize the great value of it and became closet AAB readers, you know, maybe not wanting to admit it within the context of the Theosophical Society, but that gaining a great deal. And just imagine, this third installment is coming. We are working for that. It can be considered selfish. Wouldn't it be great to know all those things? But at the same time, we're really trying to promote the ageless wisdom among the people who can benefit from it and to explain it to them in a way which they can get. And we can't underestimate them either, you know. We can't say, oh, this really has to be watered down and the Tibetan's words can't be used. He really warned us against that. He says, these are the words of a master and they carry a certain potency. So use those words. And we will do that and then go into the necessary explanations as required. Isn't it an honor to be able to study the Tibetans' work and that which has been conveyed from the hierarchy with the permission of Master K.H. and the Christ and ultimately of Sanat Kumara? Isn't it an honor and a privilege? And I don't know anybody who's really into it who would give it up for other things, really. So look, let's call this that. We'll call this that. This is the end. Whoops. We'll call this the end of second initiation compilation program number 7. And today is the 18th of June, and the year is 2018. And we have here the beginning of SIC, same thing, program number 8 coming up whenever it comes up, hopefully a little later today, and we will see. So meanwhile, everybody, study hard, integrate your studies into your doing, meditate with depth so that you're not just stuck in the words, but have the experience that goes with the words. That's so important, and many of us have learned the words. The question is, do we have the experience that goes with the words? That's the question. Okay, thank you. Lots of love to everybody. See you before long, and who knows, maybe later tonight I can get into program number 8 if the mundane duties don't work against that desirable possibility. See you soon. Bye-bye.